Anakin fell into a sense of calmness. Something had guided him in here. Something had beckoned to him, promising him a better battlefield against the overwhelming odds. He knew it was the Force. In here, the three young Jedi could use their insights where the pilots of the enemy fighters, whatever they might be, could not.
"Hear me,"
came the youngest Solo's telepathic call to his siblings.
"Join with me, three as one. Lend me your eyes."
"Anakin," came Jason's reply. Jaina didn't reply, and Anakin sensed that she had already accepted his call. It all happened in a matter of seconds, the three young Solos finding communion, a telepathic joining, and bond. Now each flew with the added perspectives offered by the other two flanking craft. Their symbiosis mounted, and Anakin, as the focal point, felt they were working together and with the Force as he had only dreamed possible. The enemy fighters couldn't come close to facing the trio. Any that got near were just blasted out of the sky or run into asteroids. Anakin was trembling violently, he knew, though he hardly felt it. Missile after asteroid after missile zipped across his line of sight. Or was it Jason's line of sight? Too much information, he knew. Too insane. He desperately tried to hold the bond together.
"Anakin!"
He heard Jaina's call over the comm, and he realized then that he had passed the breaking point, that the bond was gone.
"Vector out!"
Jaina cried. And one thought accompanied those words. Jason's telepathic instructions to turn and burst into hyperspace. Anakin clipped an asteroid just a bit, causing little or no damage to his ship, but sending him into a disastrous spin.
"Go!"
came Jason's command, followed by the almost magical weight of persuasion of the Force. Anakin pumped his yokes desperately, trying to level off, trying to hold his focus as the stars whirled about him. He couldn't straighten at all. It was only a matter of seconds before he was splattered, and then he was gone, shot out of Lando's Folly in the blink of an eye. Jaina and Jason managed somehow to extricate themselves from the belt with some fancy flying and a good share of dumb luck. Han and Leia watched it all from the cockpit of the Falcon, sitting in stunned silence. They could hardly believe what they had just witnessed, the beauty and the precision, and the loss of their youngest child. The fighting was over, the time being, at least, though the remaining enemies were fleeing, headed for the outer planets and then beyond.
"Where is he?"
Han cried.
"He jumped to hyperspace,"
Jason tried to explain.
"He was in a spin. He had to get out."
"Did you get a course setting?"
Han interrupted. There came a long pause, and Han and Leia understood the truth of it. Anakin had just blasted out of there haphazardly, had leapt into hyperspace without any understanding of where it might take him, or if other solid bodies might be in the way. He could be anywhere by this time. His atoms could already be scattered all over the sector.
"You two, get back to Debrillion,"
Han instructed.
"We're going after Anakin."
"We'll go with you,"
Jaina started to offer.
"Back to Debrillion,"
Han roared. The reception was triumphant indeed for Jaina and Jason when they put their TIE fighters back down to dock on Debrillion, but neither felt much like celebrating, for they had no idea of where their brother might be, or if he had survived. And even if he had, the battle up there had been painful, with many losses sustained. At this moment, the cost of battle didn't seem worth the victory, the twins.
"He's all right," Jaina said to Jason, walking over to join her brother. "I can feel it."
Jason nodded his agreement, but the sentiment did little to bolster his spirits, for the young man now waged a personal battle. He had been caught completely off guard by such use of the Force as Anakin showed to him up there in the asteroid belt, when the three had joined so symbiotically to act practically as a single fighting unit, the perfect squadron. In light of that display, Jason had to question his own philosophy concerning the Force as a tool for improvement of the self, a strictly inner usage designed to allow a Jedi to discern his or her place in the universe. Anakin had proved to him the limitations of his philosophy. He had shown him that perhaps the potential of the Force as a tool for perfect teamwork was too great for them to ignore. He looked at Jaina, and she studied his stern expression carefully.
"Perhaps I was wrong to always train alone," he admitted. A smile came over Jaina as she caught on to his present thinking. "Anakin has been thinking about a link like that for a long time," she responded. "He's often told me of his plans to form a Jedi squadron, acting so much in harmony that nothing could stand against them." Jason looked past her. "It's a good plan," he decided. He told himself repeatedly that the Millennium Falcon would soon return with Anakin in tow. Perhaps then he and his little brother could figure out a bit more balance between their seemingly conflicting viewpoints. Out of power and truly battered, Anakin entertained doubts not unlike those of his older brother. If he had listened to Jason and trained himself to deeper levels of meditation, instead of concentrating on the outward battle skills, the mentally joined run through the belt would not have so overloaded his sensibilities. Anakin leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes. He sent his thoughts out, seeking some connection with Jaina and Jason, trying to defeat the thousands of kilometers between them, to know that they were still alive and okay. There was only the emptiness of space. The Millennium Falcon zoomed away from Lando's twin planets. If he used the sixth planet as a guiding beacon out of the belt, he'd have headed in the general direction of Dantooine. Han was talking to himself more than to Leia as he tried to sort out the course. As he spoke, he moved his hand along the top of his navigational panel as if he was trying to feel out the right choice, as well as reason it out. Leia grabbed that hand suddenly, lifting it from the controls before Han could lock anything in. "I hear him." And as she finished, as the truth of her own words came clear to her, her lips curled into an inevitable smile. When the Jade Saber put down on Dubrillion later the same day as the battle, Lando had insisted that Luke come with him right away. "We found it on the outskirts of the city," Lando explained. "The pilot was already dead, but we still found it with our sensors tuned to detect life forms. The ship is a living organism, not a machine." Luke climbed into the starfighter's cockpit. He saw a mask sitting before him and tentatively reached for it. It was alive, he knew before he touched it. Luke pulled the mask and helmet over his head and immediately felt the joining. And he heard a voice, a distant murmuring, in what sounded like the same language he had heard the membranous ball on the Jade Saber used. He put off the mask and climbed out of the cockpit. "We need 3PO, he told Lando, hoping that the droid would be able to decipher the language. But Luke's train of thought, his mounting excitement about possibilities of discovery here, abruptly halted, for he saw his wife not so far away, staring at him, the look on her face telling him that something was terribly, terribly wrong. Luke looked at Lando. "What is it?" Luke demanded, his anxiety escalating with each word. "She'll tell you," Lando said, patting his friend on the shoulder. It was a moment of tears and memories, a time for Luke and Mara to feel the weight of the loss of Chewbacca, and to remember all the times he had saved them and those they loved. Both Luke and Mara called upon their understanding of the Force, then, of the binding truth of life, and found comfort there. As Ben Kenobi had remained with Luke, as Yoda had remained with Luke, so too would Chewbacca remain an integral living being within the hearts and minds of those who so loved him. It was a moment of grief, and one both Luke and Mara understood that could not last the appropriate time. They had to get to work. "The key is that planet in the Helska system," Luke explained to Lando after the man had shown him two other surprises they had pulled from the downed enemy starfighter, a suit more like a skin, and a star-shaped creature with a sixth appendage. Both were alive, and Luke had dared to experiment with him. Now he understood the truth of the fourth planet. Now he knew that their enemies were living beneath its ice, in the cold, watery depths. "I've got to get down, underneath the crust." Lando nodded and rubbed his chin. "There is a way," he admitted. "There are mining ships used to get through the icy crust. I can have one here before the morning." Once Anakin had boarded the Falcon and run into his mother's wing arms, Han put the tie in tow and turned back for Dabrillion. Somewhat more tentatively than he had rushed to his mother, Anakin, with Leia hovering behind, walked onto the Falcon's bridge where his father was waiting. Han turned and stared hard at his son. And then his stern edge melted away, and he bolted from his seat, wrapping Anakin in a bear hug. He jumped back almost at once, though, and slugged his son in the shoulder.
"You ever do that to me again, kid, and I'll kick you from here to Coruscant."
The scolding hit Anakin's ears like the sweetest music ever played. They were back on Dubrillion the next morning, landing soon after the curious mining craft that Lando had spoken to Luke about was towed in. It was called an ice borer, Lando told Luke, also known as a stylus ship because of its shape, long and narrow with a tapered front end. The pilot would lie down along the length of this translucent cylinder, head forward. It didn't look promising to Luke. "It's not for long-distance flight," Lando explained. "It'll have to be towed by carry ship to the Helska system." "How does it get through the ice?" Lando led him around to the front. "Pretty simple," he said. "We've got a vaporizing heat charge up here. You fire it off just before you hit, it drills a hole in the ice before you, and you dive in before it freezes up again." They were interrupted by Jason's call.
"They're back!" as the young man ran into the room and to Luke's side. "Mom and Dad, and they've got Anakin."
Luke nodded, not surprised. "And 3PO," he said. "Let's get some more answers."
"It's not a difficult language at all, Master Luke," C-3PO announced a short while later after viewing the footage R2-D2 had shot of the message to Yeoman Carr.
"I wanted to say,"
an obviously impatient Han interrupted. C-3PO turned to regard him and obediently recited,
"The movement of the Praetorite Vong is underway. Your part, for now, is done. Good work."
"Where in the galaxy do they speak such language?" Han demanded.
"Maybe nowhere," Luke answered ominously. "3PO, I'm not done with you yet." Luke brought forth the mask he had found in the alien cockpit.
"Put it over your head," he instructed the droid.
"Now listen to it and remember every word."
"They call those fighters squirrel skippers," C-3PO soon informed them. "They breed them to serve as starships, both fighter and larger."
The simplicity and efficiency stunned Luke. It was apparent to him now that this was indeed an extragalactic intelligence at work. An obviously hostile one, employing methods and organic technology far different from, and perhaps superior to, anything the New Republic could use to counter it.
"Uncle Luke's the wrong one to go to the ice planet," Jason said to Jaina.
"I'm more concerned about Aunt Mara," Jaina replied. "Her disease is getting the best of her right now. We can't let her go."
Jason looked at his sister, smiled, and nodded. "We can't stop her if Uncle Luke goes." Jaina spent a long while dissecting that look, making certain that Jason was entertaining similar ideas to her own.
"I can fly the ice borer," she offered.
"Seems to me that your skills would be better suited for the carry ship." Jaina thought about it and didn't disagree. If they had to pull a quick retreat from the Helska system, she'd be a better choice at piloting the main craft.
"Where's R2? Jason asked. "We should leave a message."
Luke paced the room while Han, Leia, and Lando sat at the small round table, arguing about whether they should go ahead and attack with the assembled fleet or wait for more firepower to come in. On the table sat a view screen filled with the imposing image of Commander Warshak Rojo of the Star Destroyer Rejuvenator.
"We should go straight to Helska,"
Commander Rojo insisted.
"It will be a clean sweep, I assure you. I have enough firepower to level the enemy base and the planet it's on, if need be."
Luke started to turn to say something to the stubborn man, but a flash beyond the window caught his eye. He moved closer, staring into the dark night, and knew at once which ship had taken off. The carry ship, Mary Minor, and its ice borer companion. A sickly feeling came over Luke then, as he guessed who might be flying the Mary Minor, and who might be accompanying her.
He ran out into the hall. "Good evening, sir," C-3PO said, as Luke barreled into him.
"Not now," Luke said.
"But R2, sir, a message from Master Jason,"
the now frantic C-3PO yelled. Luke skidded to a stop just as Leia bent to R2-D2 and activated his hologram projector.
"Uncle Luke,"
came the greeting.
"Forgive us our presumption, but it seemed obvious to me and Jaina that you're needed with the fleet in the main attack force. We know what you intended with the fourth planet, to explore and determine the strength and purpose of our enemies. Keep Aunt Mara at rest. She needs it. Jaina and I will be fine, and we'll carry out the mission perfectly. We promise."
"I'm gonna kick his..."
Han started to say. "Jason's right," Luke interrupted, and both Han and Leia stared at him in disbelief. He grabbed Han by the arm as the man started away.
"You're raising Jedi Knights," Luke said to him. "Warriors, explorers. They can't turn away from the duty that is before them, just for our peace of mind."
"They're just kids," Han argued.
"And so were we when the Empire unveiled the Death Star," Luke reminded.
"Speak for yourself," Han growled.
He narrowed his eyes as he stared hard at his friend.
"I just went halfway across the galaxy, pulling one of them back, and now I've got the other two running off in another direction."
Luke smiled at Han. "Get used to it," he said. "And enjoy it while you can. You won't be able to keep up with them much longer." Han and Luke looked at each other for a long moment.
"Why'd you have to make 'em Jedi?"
Han asked. And it was obvious from his tone, from the fact that he finished with that typical Han Solo snicker, that Luke's argument had gotten through to him. A short time later, the Falcon and the Jade Saber blasted away from Dubrillium, along with every worthy warship Lando could muster. Off-planet, they rendezvoused with Rojo's contingent and blasted away full speed for the Helska system. Jaina banked the carry ship around the sun, trusting the guidance of the coordinates Luke had put into the nav computer. "Everything's lined up," she informed her brother. "If you fire any correcting jets, they might see them, so sit tight and trust my aim."
"Let her go,"
Jason replied. The stylus ship, Jason belly down and head forward, rocketed away. Now came the task that Jason had feared since they had left Dubrillium. He brought his bare toe down and prodded the alien suit, the Ooglith Cloaker, according to C-3PO's best translation, and then held his breath as the obedient creature began its joining on his feet, then rolled up his legs. He brought the star-shaped mask, the Nullith, up to his face and fought aside his gagging as the tube snaked down his throat. By the time Jason had finished, he looked ahead to see the fourth planet looming large before him. He knew that his Uncle Luke had preset the coordinates for where the ice borer would set down. But then he heard a call in his mind, a cry for help that he could not ignore. He focused his thoughts on that cry, closed his eyes, and let the Force be his guide. Hardly thinking of the action, he gently touched the guidance jets, igniting a short burn that turned his nose to the side and, he feared, likely alerted his enemies to his presence. He glanced upward to see a horde of coral skippers closing, and looked back as he descended across the last few hundred meters. Then he fired the charge, and the shaped bomb leapt ahead of him, burrowing into the ice. He plunged through the planetary crust, and beyond, into the calm waters below. Jason then brought the little ship up against the planetary crust and extended small grabber arms to secure her in place. Took a deep breath, hoping it wasn't his last, and punched the three-key sequence for underwater ejection. The compartment slid open, and Jason crawled out into the open water. He saw lights in the distance, far away and far below. As he moved forward, he recognized the lights for what they were. Some sort of organized base. A host of worries crossed through Jason's mind at that moment. He felt that he looked enough like one of the Coral Skipper pilots with his mask and the second skin clothing. But how would he communicate with them? How would he slip by any sentries? He took a deep and steadying breath, reminding himself that he was a Jedi and could improvise through tight situations.
And there was one other thing aiding him, for that mysterious call had not abated, and seemed even stronger now, and very close. To Jason's relief, it didn't appear to be coming from the distant lighted base, but from up here, near the crust. He crawled along the underside of the great ice crust, letting the call guide him. Then he came to an abrupt halt, for a procession of lights rose through the water toward him. Jaina throttled the Merry Miner out to full, though the speed of the closing coral skippers mocked her attempted run. "They've got me," she muttered. She started to put out a telepathic call of farewell, but then, sensing something, she opened her eyes and nearly toppled with relief. The Rejuvenator came out of hyperspace right before her. Other ships, cruisers, and gunships appeared. And before Jaina could even open a channel and warn the approaching fleet, the great Star Destroyer dropped into attack mode. Then the Jade Saber and the Millennium Falcon came into view.
"Get behind us," Luke called. "We'll take care of these guys."
Jason didn't know whether to flee or fight, but found the point to be moot, for the nearest masked alien waved him into line.
"They think I'm one of them,"
Jason told himself, and he nodded and started forward, following the group to a hole that led into an airy, roughly dome-shaped chamber. Jason knew at once that this small room held the unknown caller. He had to fight hard to keep his eyes from widening in horror, for there, in the corner, curled a man, a Jedi Knight, and one that Jason knew. Jason glanced to the other side to see a beautiful woman standing agitated but helpless between a pair of enemies. To Jason's surprise, he recognized the woman, and not Miko Reglia, as the source of the telepathic call.
"Come, Miko," he heard the leader of the group say. "It is time to die."
"Leave him alone," the woman across the way pleaded. "You're just going to fake it again. They don't mean it, Miko."
She ended her speech abruptly with a gasp as the warrior beside her doubled her over with a heavy punch to her gut. Jason pulled his lightsaber free and extended the glowing blade, cutting a sweep that slashed through the nearest warrior's knee, severing the leg and dropping him with an agonized howl.
"Go, Miko,"
he prompted his fellow Jedi. But he knew before he even looked that way that Miko didn't have much, if any, fight left in him, that he was a broken shell of a man. This was Jason's fight. Han kept the Falcon back as the bulk of the fleet soared in, as did Luke with the Jade Saber, both of them keeping a protective watch about Jaina and her defenseless carry ship. Given their successful repulsion of the attacking coral skippers at the beginning of this battle, it seemed as if Commander Rojo had been correct in his estimation of the enemy forces. Now, with the brief respite, Han had to find out about his oldest son.
"Where's your brother?"
he called to Jaina, and her pause told him all that he needed to know.
"Luke, I need you," Han called.
"I heard,"
came the response.
"We'll get to the planet as soon as the Rejuvenator and her escorts clear..."
Luke's voice trailed off, and as soon as Han looked ahead, he understood why. Thousands of coral skippers had come out at the approaching fleet, zipping and zooming around the many starfighters. What had been a rout and chase was suddenly a scene of absolute chaos, of battle joined heavily. Han and Leia put the Falcon through all her moves, dipping and spinning, cutting fast, but the coral skippers were amazingly good, keeping their attacks wonderfully coordinated. Now Commander Rojo was calling out desperately for assistance through an almost opaque shield of static, and one side of the Star Destroyer sparkled with hit after hit, inflicted by a continuing line of coral skippers. Then a barrage of larger missiles roared up from volcano-like cones, lifting up from the planet's surface. Rojo cried out one last time, and then he was gone, his ship flaming and angling down past the fourth planet. Jason blocked the swing of a club, spun around to bring his lightsaber in line to block a strike from the other side, and in the middle of the turn snapped the lightsaber back to intercept a thud bug. He continued to spin and to slice, to fight completely defensively, because to do otherwise, even within the grasp of the Force, would be to die.
He chopped one club aside hard, then spun, expecting an attack from the other side. And indeed, he did see the two aliens coming at him, and it took him a moment to register the truth of the attack. To see the human hand covering each face, tearing at the mask. Miko Reglia drove relentlessly on, getting his fingers into that all-important Ooglith cloaker release point. And as the living suits began their retraction, the battered young Jedi pushed on even more powerfully, bearing his surprised enemies into the hall and going in right by them. Miko Reglia felt the freezing water drawing out his life force. But in this final act of defiance against the Yuuzhan Vong, he held on stubbornly, preventing the two warriors from scrambling back out of the hole, determined that he would not die before them. Back in the chamber, the remaining Yuuzhan Vong made the mistake of lurching back toward the hole in an attempt to catch his falling kin. Jason wasted no time, lightsaber flashing, going for the off-balance alien, and then, when that warrior's companion came in to defend, turning the attack fast upon him, scoring a quick kill with the thrust to the chest.
Miko!
He heard Danny cry, and he turned to see her crawling for the hole.
Miko!
Jason glanced around, looking for solutions. They brought an extra suit and mask for him, he said to Danny. Get into them! And then he dived into the hole. Danny, suited, went in a few moments later. And then she saw Jason shaking his head gravely, indicating to her that Miko Reglia was dead. He took her hand and pulled her back to the waiting stylish ship, and somehow they managed to squeeze in side by side. Stunned and horrified calls jumbled through the open channels on both the Millennium Falcon and the Jade Saber after the destruction of Rejuvenator. Most prominent among them were cries for a general retreat.
Do it!
Luke scanned it across all channels.
All haste!
Jaina, on Mary Minor,
came the call.
Uncle Luke, Jason's still down there.
Luke tried to reach out for Jason with the Force, and at first heard no response. But then he closed his eyes and reached in deeper, and he heard.
Lock in coordinates for hyperspace, Luke called. We'll jump as soon as Jason blasts free.
An explosion tore through the ice pack up ahead, and a narrow shape lifted into the air. Before either Han or Luke, Leia or Mara could call out instructions, the Mary Minor swooped between the lead ships, rushing straight out to literally catch the stylish ship with perfect timing and leap to light speed with precision. Both pilots on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon were struck all but dumb, until Han finally managed to whisper, "The kid can fly." An explosion shook the Falcon, and then the ship dipped suddenly, as a tractor beam from the surface nearly caught it, poignant reminders that it was past time to leave. They had escaped, barely. Still, none of them were ready to call this day anything close to a victory. As soon as the three ships came out of hyperspace, Luke opened channels to the other two, and so it began. The analysis of what had just happened. A hush engulfed the others when an unfamiliar voice piped in, Danny Kui beginning a long and thorough explanation of this enemy they now faced. From the time they had breached the Galactic Rim, to their journey to Belkaden, to her experiences under their control. When she finished, there was near silence for a while, except that the people on the Falcon and the Mary Minor could hear Luke and Mara speaking quietly about something.
"Can't let us in on the secret?"
Leia asked. "We were talking about the creature Danny spoke of," Luke replied. "The Yamask." Then his voice thick with meaning, he added, "The War Coordinator."
"So, that creature is what turned our enemies into such a tremendous force."
Leia followed the reasoning.
"That creature brought them together into a single fighting unit. Like me, Jason, and Jaina in the build."
Anakin put in. "Then we have to destroy that creature," Luke reasoned.
"You won't get near it without an army of soldiers,"
Danny said without hesitation.
"Or more,"
Leia added grimly.
"We hardly hurt them today, and what will we be left with for defense at the core if we bring the fleet out here and lose?"
The Praetor at Vong will walk across the galaxy one system at a time,
Danny added. And as she was the expert among them on their enemies, those words rang ominously indeed.
How else can we beat it? Luke asked. What can we do here and now to defeat the Amosk?
I've got some heat charges that will do some damage to that ice crust,
Lando offered.
I don't think they'd do much good,
Danny put in.
The Yamask is down deep where the water is warmer from the volcanoes. Too bad we couldn't just shut the volcanoes off and freeze the thing,
Jason added.
We can shut the volcanoes off,
a surprisingly animated Anakin interjected.
Or at least we can freeze water around them. If we can see evaporation around the planet, we'll cool it down.
Han snorted.
If we can get that amount of energy out here, we can just use it to destroy the planet,
he reasoned.
Unless we turn the Yamask's energy back in on the planet,
Danny said suddenly. Lando, Luke called. When you were on Naklon, didn't you do some serious energy reflection?
You mean the sunlight?
Lando asked. He paused.
Shield ships,
he said evenly. Get them out here as quickly as you can, Luke ordered. You better bring back all the starfighters and gunships we can manage, too, he added, to help protect the shield ships while they do their work.
Already making the call,
Lando assured him. They set up a rendezvous at a nearby planet, one where Jaina, Jason, and Danny could get out of the Merry Miner and go aboard the other ships, with Jason taking Lando's place in the Falcon's bottom gun pod, Danny going to the Jade Saber with Jaina and Mara, and Luke going back into the Jade Saber's hold, prepping his X-Wing for the coming fight. It took a while for the lumbering shield ships to make their way to the fourth planet of the Helska system, but when they did, they came out of hyperspace practically as a singular unit. Before any Yuuzhan Vong had risen against them, they were already moving into place, the six great umbrella-shaped shield ships falling into orbit around the ice planet and decreasing that orbit with each rotation. At first, the pilots of those shield ships reported little energy, but then suddenly each of the pilots cried out that the energy readings on their honeycombed hulls had suddenly soared. The Yamask had awoken to the threat. And the Coral Skipper swarm rose up. Cover for the shield ships, Luke called through all channels. Give them the time they need. He left it at that, not adding that he had no notion at all of how long that might be. Luke's X-Wing led the Falcon and the Jade Saber into position, protecting one of the shield ships as it worked to deflect the energy back at the planet. The other fighters similarly went to their positions, some holding defensive arrays, while others charged the Coral Skippers, then vectored away, bringing pursuit after them, and thus away from the shield ships. That would be Luke's tactic as well, only he intended to take it to a higher level. Intended to dive right down into that atmosphere, bringing as many Coral Skippers as possible to the defense of their immediate home. Luke plunged into the fog. More and more Coral Skippers appeared on the scene as a gigantic shield ship exploded. All the frequencies jammed with cries from the escorting starfighters and cruisers, screams that shields were gone, calls for help.
What's taking it so long?
Han growled. He winced as the Falcon jolted from hit after hit. Another shield ship exploded.
We should break off,
Lando remarked.
We can't,
Leia retorted sharply.
This is our chance.
A third shield ship blew apart, and that chance seemed a longer shot by far. Then a pair of Coral Skippers, in opposing spins before the Falcon, came together with a devastating explosion.
Nice shot, Han called.
I didn't,
Anakin replied.
Me neither,
Jason said. Han and Leia looked at each other, then at Lando.
It's working,
Leia breathed. The fog around the planet lifted until within a span of seconds there was not a wisp of vapor in its atmosphere. Then the planet seemed to grow fuzzy and distorted, as if they were looking at it through a glass globe.
The Mezzakanli wave!
Anakin squealed.
The fourth state of matter! The water's got to be solidifying, at least!
As Han and the others watched, the planet's rotation slowed. Unbelievable, Han muttered.
It won't last for long,
Jason explained.
The energy's gone, so the evaporation's done.
And what happens when the planet starts up again? Han asked ominously.
Well, with the expansion created by the ice...
Jason began. And that was enough for Han, who got a typically bad feeling about this.
Luke,
Leia whispered breathlessly.
Get out of here! Get out of here!
Han cried through all channels.
Full retreat!
And despite Leia's continuing plea for her missing brother, Han brought the Vulcan screaming around. Pointed her nose away from the fourth planet, which was beginning to rotate faster again, and punched the throttle. Slowing, only long enough for the jade saber to come zooming by. It hit Han then and hard. The reality of what he was doing, of his retreat. So much like the retreat Anakin had pulled on Cernpadal, leaving Chewie behind. He almost turned the Falcon back around, plunging toward the planet in a desperate search for Luke. Almost. But he could not. If he had been alone, then there would have been no hesitation. But he was not alone. He was responsible for more lives than his own. As Anakin had been.
All the rest of the fleet broke off, too, turning tail and running. And then the whole planet blew. A shattering, sparkling explosion of ice crystals catching the Helsken sun's rays in a myriad of sparkles and colors. Out of that widening cloud came a single black speck, a single X-wing surfing on the very edge of an overpowering wave.
The fight with the scattered Yuuzhang Vong was going quite well. The remaining enemy forces were no more than rogue squadrons, and Kip Duran, among many others, was out on the hunt. At least he could rest easy that the mop-up of the Praetorite Vong was in good hands, Luke thought as he entered the room. Mara wasn't there, and he had to work hard to suppress the urge to go and find her. Her illness was winning now. Luke knew. And as far as Mara was concerned, her battle had to be a private thing. Luke turned his thoughts outward. He couldn't help in the private struggle, perhaps. But what about the more general fight? He held up a vial, one containing the beetle they had pulled from Belkaden. Mara had felt within her a definite attraction for the thing, as if her disease had reached out to it. Was it connection or coincidence? That the disease within Mara showed up when it did, so near to an extragalactic invasion. Luke didn't know, but he intended to try to find out. If there was any way that he could help his beloved wife, then he had to try. In a room down the hall, Leia Organa Solo packed her belongings. She, too, had so much work ahead of her, she knew. Leia appreciated how close they had come to complete disaster, how easily the Praetorite Vong might have marched across the galaxy one sector at a time, with the stubborn and often ignorant counselors of the New Republic never really understanding until it was too late that they had to pay attention to this threat. That would be Leia's job now, her unavoidable duty, despite her personal preference to stay out of it all.
Ambassador Leia, the woman whispered, not liking but grudgingly accepting the seemingly inevitable title, one that the Council would bestow upon her, declaring her to be an ambassador of Dubrillion and the nearby sectors of the Outer Rim, including the Helska system. She could only hope Boris Kvelia and his cronies would listen.
Halfway across the galaxy, another representative set about his latest task. Nom Anur knew of the disaster of the Praetorite Vong, but it was not over, he knew. The Praetorite Vong was but a fraction of what his people could throw this way. Now the executor went back to his work. He was on a small planet, a relatively unknown piece of real estate, but one with a brewing civil war and a mounting hatred for the New Republic. He'd stir that brew.
The Millennium Falcon glided in, quietly and slowly. The dead ball that had been Cernpadal wobbling before them. Leia stood beside Han on the bridge, saying nothing, allowing him this moment of solitude and reflection.
"How close do you want to get?" she asked at length.
And only then did Han tune in to the image on the screen before them and realize that Cernpadal had grown quite large. They hadn't come here to try to retrieve Chewie's body, of course. That task was beyond them, beyond anyone. Han had come here, and Leia had readily agreed to it, because he needed this moment.
"What are we going to tell Chewie's family?" Han asked.
"The truth," Leia said, "that he died a hero."
"I never thought..."
Han began quietly, his voice breaking apart. Leia looked at him gently, allowed him the moment to compose himself.
"I had built this bubble around us,"
Han tried to explain.
"Around all of us, you, me, Chewie, the kids, Luke, Mara, even Lando. Heck, even the stupid droids. We were all in it, you know? Nothing could hurt us, could really hurt us," he went on.
And then his voice broke up and he just shook his head and blinked away the tears. And when that didn't work, he wiped them away and stared out at wobbling Cernpadal. The bubble was gone. The alien threat had been all but eradicated, so it seemed. But to Han Solo, the galaxy suddenly seemed a more dangerous place by far.
Another title in the Star Wars series available on audio from Random House Audiobooks is Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. Star Wars The New Jedi Order, Vector Prime, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 1999, all rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 1999, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audiobooks presentation.